Yeah, sure.
It's very clear. The angels say, he told you he was going to be 3 days and three nights in the grave. I believe firmly that he was crucified on Wednesday afternoon. Thursday was the Shabbat. And going okay. back, no, going back to your dates and the whole thing, it's very clear in Scripture that the first and the last days of Pesach are a Shabbat. They don't call it that. They call it you do no work, but it's exactly the same. It's called even here of the Shabbat. And even in some places here, it talks about the great Shabbat, which
okay.
is not...
Now, and that's what we're not talking about today, so thank you. Because we have dealt with that, and I don't have a final answer for the dating of Pesach. But we are going to talk about the other end of this now, the day of the resurrection. So what all happened in this day of the resurrection? And so far we've had the women at the tomb. In the morning, they meet the angels, they go talk to people. Makes good sense. You don't go doing this in the middle of the night, especially when Roman soldiers are crucifying people of your particular group. So they go and find them in the morning, in the daylight. And that same day, Jesus is walking to Emmaus and talks with two people. And it says... Now that same day, verse 13. And so we get to Emmaus, and the Lord breaks bread. They realize who he is. Jesus disappears. They run to Jerusalem, or they walk, or they go to Jerusalem. Take some time. How many have walked from Emmaus to Jerusalem?
And what are you talking about? Which Emmaus are you talking about?
How many have walked from Emmaus to Jerusalem and done it in 3 hours? Or less.
An hour and 29 minutes from...
Yeah, but that just...
You can
that's pretty fast, Dave.
You can do it from Moksa.
It's only on Yom Kippur we did. There's no traffic.
Okay. All right. Anyway, that certainly beats Latrun, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. You wouldn't... Latrun.
Is that supposed what? To be another
Latrun? One of the Emmauses is down at Latrun. There's also a claim for Abu Ghosh. But in any case, the point is that we've got the disciples, we're still on the same day, they're back in Jerusalem.
And what day is that again?
Sunday.
Sunday in the morning.
Sunday, Resurrection Sunday. And now we're Sunday evening. It's Motzei Sunday. It's Erev Yom Sheni. Because they were having their dinner. They were, you know, the sun was going down. They stopped for dinner. They break bread. And that's when Jesus leaves and they take off. So call it 6 o'clock at night.
Orli Yom Sheni.
Orli Yom Sheni. Toda rabah. So they come back. The very earliest they're going to be here is about 8 o'clock our time. They could be here later than that. But we're, let's use our dating right now, our Sunday. They're back on Sunday. It's Sunday evening. They're with the disciples and they say, we've seen the Lord too. And they say, oh, you're not the only ones. We've got some women running around, which is a wonderful testimony to the resurrection, because no one in antiquity would think up women as witnesses. It was sort of the one way to prove that the witnesses were true, is to have women do it.
I was going to say, women will more likely tell the truth.
And because they weren't allowed to be witnesses, or were thought of as a lower witness, you would never concoct a story and have people that are socially lowered to be the people doing the proclamation. So it is ironically actually makes for a stronger case. Anyway, but that's not what we're talking about today. We get them back. We're going to learn about Shavuot. So we come back. Let's follow Luke now. While they're talking, Jesus stood among them, 36. And he says, touch and see, and you know, I'm not a ghost. And then Some still did not. While they still didn't believe him because of joy, he said, "Do you have anything to eat?" And they gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate it in their presence. And he said, "This everything I've told you, the law, the prophets, the Psalms about me." He opened their eyes. This is what the Messiah will do. I'm going to send you what my Father has promised, but stay in the city until you've been clothed with power on high. Okay. And when he led them to the vicinity of Bethany, he lifted up his hands and blessed them. And while he was blessing them, was taken away into heaven. They worshipped him, returned to Jerusalem with great joy, stayed continually at the temple praising God. Now, what day... Well, I'm going to read that again. He finishes talking. I'm going to send you what my Father has promised. When he had led them out to the vicinity of Bethany, he lifted up his hands and blessed them, and he was taken up into heaven. Now, what day was that?
40th.
Supposedly the 40th day.
40 days after.
You guys can't read a text. What in the world? What did Luke just say? What day is this?
Wednesday.
Wait. When he goes up.
Yeah.
The 50th
day. What does Luke 24 say?
It doesn't give a day.
What?
It's the same day as the resurrection.
In this version, it's the same day as the resurrection.
Yeah. That's what we're confused, isn't it? No 40
or it looks like it's the same day as the resurrection. Okay? It looks like. We do know that the Emmaus Road incident is specifically called the same day. And they hightail it back, and we get this interaction. Jesus talks, and then it says, when he led them out, he lifted up his hands and said goodbye.
It can't be the same day because it doesn't.
Very good. It can't be the same day.
It can't be the same day.
Now.
So it doesn't give a date.
And it doesn't give a date. Now we're getting back to our nothing. There is, technically, it doesn't say that it's the same day. It certainly implies it's the same day. It is written as if it is telescoped. I call this telescoping. When you tell something and it gets squished so it looks like it's one-dimensional and all...
But you yourself said that it takes quite some time for those two witnesses to get back to Jerusalem.
We're debating whether it's 1 to 3 hours.
Yes. So?
So it's...
So it can't be that day.
No, he stays with them. Towards the evening, the day is far spent. He went in to stay with them.
It could be the next day. Fine. If you want to go Jewish calendar, I said we're going to switch to our calendar and call it Sunday. But if you want to switch to Jewish calendar, it's now Yom Sheni. So it's the day after the resurrection. And the implication here is that the day after the resurrection, at night, the night before, Jesus ascended. That's what Luke 24 says. If all you had was the Gospel of Luke, then I think the whole world would assume that the ascension happened about 24 hours after the resurrection. That's how I would read the text, if it were me.
Yeah, but that's isn't that true?
But it's not true. I know it's not true, but I'm trying to help us grapple with texts.
Ambivalent texts.
Much ado about nothing. Okay? Because nothing is important.
that's the danger when they have all the little sections categorized.
Now, I'm going to go to one more thing. I'm going to go to the point, though. Well, let me go. The person who wrote this book was happy with what he wrote. He wrote that, and this is very important for us to learn how to read an ancient author. This ancient author wrote this And he was, I'm sure he was fully aware that somebody might read it the way I've been discussing it right now. And it didn't bother him at all. Might bother us, but it didn't bother him. He wrote it up just as if it all happened in one day. He didn't say it happened in one day, but he wrote it up that way. Now, he wrote a second book. So we can find out what this author thinks. Most people accept that the book of Acts was also written by Luke, and I think that's there's very good reasons for that. We're going to work from that presumption. Now, Acts chapter 1. In my former book, Theophilus, I wrote about all Jesus began to do and teach until the day he was taken up to heaven. So far, so good. After giving instructions through the Holy Spirit to the apostles he had chosen, and after suffering, he presented to them and gave many convincing proofs that he was alive. He appeared to them over a period of 40 days and spoke about the kingdom of God. And on one occasion, while he was eating, he said, "Don't leave Jerusalem." Well, that's interesting. On one occasion, he said, "Don't leave Jerusalem." I wonder what occasion that was. Because in chapter 24, it sounds like it was Resurrection Sunday, but everything sounds like it's Resurrection Sunday in chapter 24. But here, it makes it sound like it was a different day, maybe. Because it's not connected to the beginning. Now it's just somewhere during that 40-day period, he said, "Wait in Jerusalem." And they gathered and he said, "Is this the time?" And he said, "It's not for you to know. But you will receive power and you'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem to the end of the earth." And after he said this, he was taken up before their very eyes, and a cloud hid him from their sight. So it sounds like the command not to leave Jerusalem was actually given towards the end of that 40 days. That's what it sounds like. Now, when we read it in the expanded version, and if it's the same author, and that really helps us, if it wasn't the same author and I was doing this, I would be nailed to the wall. People would say, "You are harmonizing in the absolute worst manner. We left that kind of interpretation 500 years ago. What are you doing? You know, Dr. Booth, turn in your sheepskin. You know full well that is verboten and you can't do that. That's harmonizing. And we spent 20 years training you not to harmonize." But if it's the same author, you're allowed to harmonize. We assume that authors are not schizophrenic, that they knew what they were doing, and that they were somehow self-consistent enough that they could cross the street without going into a fit. So Luke could write one book and write as if it all happened in one day, although he never said it happened in one day, but it sounds like it. And then in another book he says, "By the way, it was 40 days. And at the end of the 40 days, he said, 'Don't leave Jerusalem.' And he was taken up from their eyes." So, that is to bring... We now come to a question that has arisen, and I wanted David here to hear this. Remember when, in the beginning of chapter 24, when the angels are talking to the women and they say, remember how he told you while he was still with you in the Galilee? So this prediction about the death and the resurrection happened in the Galilee. So, let's turn to Mark. We're going to turn to Mark chapter 16. And in Mark, they meet a young man at the tomb. And in verse 16:6, he says, "Don't be alarmed. You're looking for Jesus, the Nazarene, who was crucified. He's risen. He's not here. Look at the place they've laid him. But go tell his disciples and Peter, he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you." So Galilee gets mentioned by the angel. But now it's not remember what he said when he was in the Galilee some weeks or months previous. Now it says, go to Galilee, because he's going to meet you there. Okay, let's turn to Matthew.
It also says, I will go before you to Galilee. In Mark, in 14:28.
Mark 14:28, thank you.
In the Garden of Gethsemane. And Matthew copies that.
Yes. After I've risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee. Thank you, David. And Peter says, oh, I won't fall away. But that is also a good point. I think Mark is pretty clear that Jesus is going to go to Galilee after the resurrection.
But notice that Luke doesn't have that.
And Luke doesn't have it, and that's why we needed David here. And now we're going to turn to Matthew. And we're going to get another testimony. And at Matthew 28, verse 5, the angel said to the women, do not be afraid. I know you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He's not here. He's risen, just as he said. Okay, so Jesus had predicted that he would rise. Come and see where they laid him. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he is risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into the Galilee. There you will see him. So Matthew.
And verse 10.
And verse 10.
He reaffirms that.
He said, yeah, don't be afraid. Tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There you will see me. And then later we have a mountain. Yes, in verse 16, the 11 went to the Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus told them to go. And now we get another saying, you know, go and preach and teach all, you know, make disciples of all nations. So Matthew has them in the Galilee, and he makes it sound like, well, actually, he doesn't have an ascension at all there, does he? He just has Jesus say that, and the story comes to an end. But if we harmonize and we have Jesus in the book of Acts taking off from a mountain, we might think of the same mountain, but it can't be the same mountain, because Matthew is in Galilee. Jesus is on a mountain in Galilee. And in Acts, he's on a mountain in Jerusalem. Bethany, where the mountain's going to split in two, according to Zechariah. So, what that means is in order for the book of Acts to be true and for Matthew to be true, there has to be a telescoping here in Matthew as well. He's got it written as though Jesus is leaving from the Galilee. Luke has it written as though he left from Jerusalem. And in his first book, like he left on the first day, and on the second book, specifically, he says it was the 40th day. Okay, so, what are our witnesses? Luke doesn't mention the Galilee. Mark says, no, he said he would go to the Galilee. And specifically, it's in exactly the same spot in the text where the angel in Luke says, remember what he said in Galilee. Well, this has caused some people, and one of them's in our room here, to think that that trigger of Luke is what caused Mark to write the whole story about a Galilean post-resurrection ministry. And
then you have John.
We're coming to him in just a second. Now, when I look at those texts of Mark, I don't believe that a first century witness, someone able to write the gospel like that, could simply make a mistake and misinterpret his source. If he rewrote his source, he rewrote it because he had more information. and was bringing something in that he thought to bring in, and he fit it in right there. Maybe the Galilee was the trigger that brought the other thing to memory, but it doesn't mean that he created it out of whole cloth. That's not the way to read ancient texts. It does happen, but you don't just assume that, and you don't assume that a person makes a mistake. I have to keep going because of time. Excuse me. Matthew 28 also mentions the Galilee. So we have Mark mentioning Galilee, we have Matthew mentioning Galilee, and these are different witnesses. And then we have John, and John has a whole chapter. And John is this remarkable fellow. He's got all of these things in it that caused people to think it was written by a Greek. And then after the Qumran discoveries, they realized that a lot of these themes that were causing them to want to date it in the second century were first century themes, already part and parcel of the culture. And John has things like the house of Beit Estah, the house of the Stoa. And he doesn't even translate it. And he has the Gabbata. And there's no way Gabbata can translate Lithostrotos, the paved way, the pavement on the ground. But we do have Gabbata as a word that shows up in Palestinian Aramaic later for a bowl, a dish. And it turns out it's a Latin word, which explains why it wasn't translated again by John. That Pilate met Jesus. What?
It's a two future Bible studies.
Well, we've done it in the past. The point, what I'm trying to make is that John has remarkable detail, and people started to notice. He has insider detail that nobody else gives. He's not bringing this from some place. He's got it. And it's the kind of detail that would be extremely difficult to manufacture. It doesn't tie in with anything, and it doesn't even, it's taken to this day, we actually aren't even sure about some of this detail. All we do, we can see that it's there and it has the ring of truth about it. So I happen to think that Gabbata was a Latin loanword, but nobody knows that for sure. All we know is it isn't an Aramaic word. It isn't a Hebrew word. But John calls it, and he says, in Hebrew, they called it Gabbata. Okay? Doesn't translate Lithostrotos. Now, so John has this kind of detail, and in chapter 21, he's got the story of Jesus in the Galilee. The disciples are fishing. They're in the Galilee. They're fishing. Jesus says, "Do you have anything for breakfast?"
Children.
And when they get off the boat, there is Jesus, and he's already frying fish. Fish. So now we have fish. Now we actually have a fish, and it says that after breakfast, Jesus then asks Peter the famous questions, you know, do you love me, etc. After breakfast implies they all had breakfast. It doesn't actually say Jesus ate fish at that point, but the assumption is, since he said, do you have any breakfast? I'm hungry. We assume that he ate it, which links
Luke.
Luke is the only one who mentioned fish. But he's got it in that day that's been telescoped.
In Jerusalem.
Could the fish of Luke 24 be this fish of John 21? We don't know. It's possible Jesus ate fish twice. Do you like that? I'm asking David, because people that deal with old texts never like to multiply things. They never like to have two. But I'm happy. Yes, fish is very probable, and it's also probable here. So the point is that we have a story. Now we have John, this guy with two. Thank you. We have John, someone who brings very credible geographical testimony, and he puts Jesus in the Galilee. So. I conclude that in spite of the fact that Luke doesn't mention the Galilee, Jesus actually went to the Galilee. The disciples went to the Galilee. And so now I start to ask myself, What would cause them to run up to the Galilee, go fishing, eat some fish, have breakfast, and within 40 days, rush back to Jerusalem? This is a lot of movement. How many have walked from here to the Galilee? Aha, got you. It's a long walk. So, now, here is my read on this. I think they left Jerusalem because they thought it was dangerous to stick around. You never knew what these Romans were going to come up with next, what kind of excuse they would come up with to start crucifying the rest of them. There's already this rumor around that they've stolen a body, they've broken into a tomb. That's a death penalty right there. So I think they left for Galilee just out of common sense and prudence, and they got out of there fast. I suspect that already in Yom Sheni, they were packing their bags and moving. Then, once they're in the Galilee, like with Matthew, it sounds like Jesus left from the Galilee. What would bring them back to Jerusalem? And the answer comes back to Shavuot. Shavuot is one of the three pilgrimage feasts. Now, people didn't come all three times a year. Your typical Galilean peasant wasn't just running up and down to Jerusalem. They would come once in a lifetime, once in a year. They wouldn't come three times every year. But that doesn't stop a pious person from doing that. And I think that the Shavuot was coming up, and Jesus directed his disciples to come back. And he must have done it at least 2 weeks before the end of Shavuot, before the end of the counting of the Omer, so that they could get back in time for him to meet them, finish his teaching, and walk them up to the hill and say, now is the time to say goodbye. And so he then leaves from the Mount of Olives, and this whole Galilean episode simply didn't interest Luke, so he drops it. Do we know that he was telescoping and dropping things? And my answer is yes. We've got proof of that from reading. We can read Luke 24 against Acts 1, and so we know that he was telescoping things. So I do not see his nothing, his lack of a mention of Galilee, as evidence that there was no Galilean ministry. So I'm going to give 1 minute to David now.
All right.
Literally 1 minute.
We need to look at Luke 24:6 and parallel. So if you don't have a synopsis, you have to.
Can you find.
You have, David. I'm literally 1 minute. You've got 40 seconds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I'll just read it. Luke says, and this is the key to the whole conundrum. Remember how he told you while he was still in Galilee that the Son of Man must be delivered and so on. But in Mark, exact parallel in Mark, you have a synopsis that says that he is going before you to Galilee. And then working according to Lindsay's theory, you look at Matthew, who copies Mark and says, and behold, he is going before you to Galilee. But you don't have, in other words, Mark, in his typical Markan way, changes it from, remember how he told you while he was still in the Galilee that the Son of Man must be delivered in the hands of sinful men and so on, becomes, the go tell his disciples in a few days, he's going before you to the Galilee. And the same in Matthew.
But that was pre-crucifixion.
Okay. No. Thank you.
No. Furthermore, Matthew 28:16-20, how the 11 disciples went to Galilee, that is not any, there's no Hebrew background, it's full of rare words and so on. And so those two things show you that there wasn't this
that Luke's source probably didn't have. Luke's source probably didn't have that, and I can accept that Mark changed the words, that Mark used the Galilee as a mnemonic device and brought in something new. But what I don't say, and this is what I wanted to end on, I don't say that that means it's not historical. The fact that somebody uses a trigger and adds another word in there is simply telescoping and doing the very thing that we've seen all of these authors doing, where they collapse things, telescope, and they put in information just like we do with our movies today. We have a true story, and we're going to take a whole person's life and crunch it into 2 hours, and we've got to get the full character of that person, and that means that you have to lay things together. We have a film man here. You must lay things together in order to get it right. You cannot just let a running clock go, a running recorder go, because it is totally unwieldy and you miss the character of the person. And they knew that good biography had to splice things together in order to get it right. That's what our authors are doing. We need to read our texts wisely. They are true. So I would say that Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts are all true. There was a ministry in the Galilee, but our recordings of this ministry have been collapsed. Matthew does not mention the return to Jerusalem. Mark doesn't mention anything, as far as we know, because we lost the last page. Luke doesn't mention the Galilee ministry at all. And John has a double closure. He has an epilogue with this whole Galilean thing. So we have three of our gospel writers testifying, and I will take them and say two or three witnesses, they're good. They may not be from the Hebrew gospel. The gospel that was written in Hebrew may not have mentioned the Galilee post-resurrection ministry. I'm happy with that. Shabbat Shalom.
Next Shabbat, the Bible study will be down in the chapel, and it's going to start at 9:30.